Her name, like everything about her, gave promise of something mighty and splendid. They called her Titanic. She was the longest, the tallest, the most luxurious ship in all creation.
Titanic was called the Ship of Dreams. And it was. It really was.
Titanic, the Ship of Dreams, a modern marvel of marine technology design, the world's most extravagant work of moving art on the high seas. Nothing was going to sink her, according to those who designed and built Titanic.
It is unsinkable. God himself could not sink this ship.
Sadly, they were wrong about that.
Water, 14 feet above the keel in 10 minutes, in the forepeak, in all three holds. And in boiler room 6.
That's right, sir.
When can we get underway, damn it?
That's 5 compartments. She can stay afloat with the first 4 compartments breached, but not 5. Not 5. As she goes down by the head, the water will spill over the tops of the bulkheads at E deck from 1 to the next, back and back. There's no stopping it.
The pumps, if we open the doors...
The pumps buy you time, but minutes only. From this moment, no matter what we do, Titanic will founder.
But this ship can't sink.
She's made of iron, sir. I assure you, she can. And she will. It is a mathematical certainty.
An hour, 2 at most. And how many aboard, Mr. Murdoch?
2,200 souls on board, sir.
Well, I believe you may get your headlines, Mr. Ismay.
The Morse code message you just heard said DEMGY position 41/46 north 50/14 west sinking cannot hear for noise of steam DEMGY CQD SOS CQD. Of course, that wasn't the real Titanic CQD call. It was a simulation with credit given to David Ring, amateur call sign November 1 Echo Alpha, and the Straight Key Century Club. You can find them at www.skccgroup.com.
CQD, sir?
That's right, CQD, the distress call. That's our position. Tell whoever responds that we're going down by the head and need immediate assistance.
Blimey.
The Titanic radio room was made up of a spark gap transmitter, pneumatic tubing, 2 straight keys, a clipboard, and a stack of telegram forms. The radio operator slept in a bedroom just next to the radio room. It was a simple bedroom made up of just a bunk bed, a small sink, with 1 small closet and a couple of life jackets. In the small closet were uniforms worn by the radio operator. For those of you out here who are unfamiliar with spark gap technology, it was the very first form of radio communication used from 1887 to roughly around World War II. In its simplest form, a spark gap transmitter consists of a spark gap connected across an oscillatory circuit consisting of a capacitor and an inductor in series or parallel. In a typical transmitter circuit, a high voltage source charges a capacitor through a resistor until the spark gap discharges. Then a pulse of current passes through the capacitor. The inductor and capacitor after the gap form a resonance circuit. After being excited by the current pulse, the oscillation rapidly decays because energy is radiated from the antenna. Because of the rapid onset and decay of the oscillation, the RF pulse occupies a large band of frequencies. The function of the spark gap is to present a high resistance to the circuit initially to allow the capacitor to charge. When the breakdown voltage of the gap is reached, it then presents a low resistance to the circuit, causing the capacitor to discharge. The discharge through the conducting spark takes the form of a damped oscillation at a frequency determined by the resonant frequency of the LC circuit. A simple spark gap consists of two conducting electrodes separated by a gap immersed within a gas, typically air. When a sufficiently high voltage is applied, a spark will bridge the gap, ionizing the gas and drastically reducing its electrical resistance. An electric current then flows until the path of ionized gas is broken, or the current is reduced below a minimum value called the holding current. This usually occurs when the voltage across the gap drops sufficiently, but the process may also be assisted by cooling the spark channel or by physically separating the electrodes. This breaks the conductive filament of ionized gas, allowing the capacitor to recharge and permitting the recharging/discharging cycle to repeat. The action of ionizing the gas is quite sudden and violent. It's disruptive, and it creates a sharp sound ranging from a snap for a spark plug to a loud bang for a wider gap. The spark gap also liberates light and heat. This is how the radio on the Titanic worked. Let's go to a National Geographic clip that talks about the very evening Titanic would sink, and specifically tells us what happened in that radio room while Titanic was still afloat.
Europe, France, Cherbourg, April 10th, 1912. It's the golden age of the ocean liner. In the last 10 years, 368 vessels have entered service on the Atlantic route alone. Mauritania, flagship of the Cunard Line, holds the speed record at 26 knots. But now, a new kind of ship has entered the market. The mighty Titanic. April 14th, 1914 a.m. In the wireless room, Captain Smith orders Phillips to use the wireless to call for help. He must get someone to come to Titanic's aid. 12:25 a.m. In the wireless room, Phillips' desperate efforts finally pay off. Another steamer, SS Carpathia, responds to his call.
The Carpathia.
But the ship is 93 kilometers away, and even at top speed, will take almost 4 hours to reach them. Where is the vessel that only 2 hours ago warned them of ice? Surely, she must hear Titanic's plea for help. Floating ice caused by the mild winter that year had been reported by several vessels in the area. One ice report stands out more than the others. A ship called SS Californian had stopped because the conditions were so bad. Her wireless operator, Cyril Evans, broadcast a warning to all ships in the area. In the days before radar, wireless was a vital source of weather information for the captain. But although the message was a warning of ice, Phillips just cut the other man off. Commander Penoia finds it hard to believe.
It's insane. Why would he do that?
Is the sinking of Titanic down to one man? Phillips, the wireless operator. Penoia contacts Morse code expert and Titanic historian Park Stevenson. He uses the 21st century's equivalent of the wireless, the video conference.
I'm working Cape Race.
He asks Stevenson if there is a reason in view of the navigational situation.
At the time, Phillips was actually receiving messages that had been waiting for Titanic from Cape Race.
Stevenson explains that as Phillips on Titanic struggled to hear faint messages from Cape Race, 725 kilometers away, Cyril Evans, the operator on the nearby SS Californian, had less sensitive equipment and was unaware that the frequency was busy. As Evans began to send his ice warning to all ships in the area, Phillips was almost deafened by the sudden broadcast.
Because the Californian was so close to the Titanic, Californian's signal would have been so loud that it would have blown his eardrums out.
Even so, Phillips' next move appears to be damning. He goes back to passengers' messages without passing the ice warning to the bridge. But Parks, with his comprehensive knowledge of the rules of wireless communication, thinks otherwise.
But if you look at the protocols, the responsibility lies squarely on Evans' shoulders.
In 1912, messages meant for the bridge of another ship had to be prefixed with the letters MSG, meaning Master Service Gram. Evans' message had no such prefix, so Phillips was justified in ignoring it. This is the reason that Evans' warning didn't reach the bridge of Titanic. Instead of resending the message, Evans turned off his wireless and went to bed.
In the end, he failed to deliver the ice warning to Titanic that his captain had ordered him to do.
But even though Evans failed to send this vital ice warning correctly, it's still impossible to blame him for the tragedy. Throughout the day, the ship had received five warnings of ice, but the captain decided to steam on at 21 and a half knots anyway. Why, after all the warnings, was the Titanic still traveling at normal speed? The story of Titanic is famous for many reasons. A brand new ship, a fascinating era, an accident that could have been foreseen, a tragic ending. Ultimately, the incident shows that no matter what humankind think they can achieve, nature should never be underestimated, or people will pay with their lives.
It's impossible to go through the record of the sinking of the Titanic and be unmoved by the human tragedy that occurred. It's just a waste. It was an incredible waste.
That was the National Geographic clip pertaining to communications events directly involved with the sinking of Titanic. The last voice you heard was that of Brian Pinoia, U.S. Coast Guard commander. The BBC has an interview with C.H. Lightoller, who was the commanding officer of Titanic the night she sank. Here's what he had to say on the subject of how communications went so wrong on that sad night.
Speaking for myself, I knew only too well that there were chances, if long ones, of sighting an iceberg. But as I reckoned, in ample time to clear it with a turn of the wheel. On that night of April the 14th, we all, that is, the captain and officers, knew perfectly well that we were just about entering the region where ice might be sighted at that particular time of the year, and had taken all necessary precautions. Now, throughout the day, there had been the usual wireless messages from different ships reporting the weather, odd icebergs, and so forth. But as none of these bergs reported lay on our course, well, they didn't directly concern us. But when the evidence came to be sifted out at the inquiry held in London afterwards, it then came out that one very vital message received in the Titanic's wireless room that night had never been delivered to the bridge. That message came from a ship called the Mesaba, warning all ships of heavy pack ice, icebergs, and field ice in an area then lying right ahead of the Titanic, and what was still worse, not far away. Those immense quantities of ice were abnormal for almost any time of the year, and the significance we should have attached to that report can hardly be exaggerated. In my opinion, it was a warning of the most vital importance. You see, I was officer of the watch and in charge of the ship when that Mesaba message came over. And I know perfectly well what I should have done if it had come to my hands. Without a shadow of doubt, I should have slowed her down at once. That would have been imperative, and sent for the captain. More than likely, in fact almost certainly, he would have stopped the ship altogether and waited for daylight to feel his way through. Anyhow, the long and short of it is, neither he nor I nor any other officer of the ship got that message.
We just heard from the most senior surviving officer of the great ship, RMS Titanic. Charles Herbert Lightoller was born on March 30, 1874, and passed away on December 8, 1952. After the Titanic tragedy, there were two different inquiries into the events that took down Titanic. One was in the United States and the other was in Great Britain. Thousands of questions were asked, but it was Coast Guard Commander Brian Pennoyer who discovered through very specific, detailed, and scientific investigation that no human man could have done anything to stop the Titanic tragedy from happening. You see, radio played a life-saving role aboard Titanic, even with the loss of life that happened. Had the Carpathia not been summoned, surely no one would have survived. You can see all of the legal documents and witness testimony, which were part of the official American and British inquiries into the Titanic tragedy, by going to www.titanicinquiry.org. Moving on to the tribute to the RMS Carpathia, we hear from Clive Cussler, a well-known novel writer and marine archaeologist. Clive tells of the immediate response by the captain of Carpathia and her crew to rescue the living souls remaining from RMS Titanic.
Just after midnight on April the 15th, 1912, Harold Cottam, the wireless operator on the Cunard steamship Carpathia, was getting ready to turn in. Harold loved this job. He used to sit up late at nights listening to transmissions from other ship and responding to the other radio operators. He passed the radio Marconi school with flying colors. This night, as he was getting ready to untie his shoes, he was sitting there with his headphones on, getting ready to take them off, and at that moment, 12:25, he received the first SOS ever sent. It was from the Titanic. They had struck an iceberg, and they were sinking. Harold confirmed with the Titanic's operator, and then he rushed out on deck, ran into a ship's officer, and together they burst into Captain Rostrum's cabin. The captain was rather upset because you just didn't burst into captain's cabins this way, but when Harold told him that he received this message that the Titanic was sinking, Rostrum asked him, "Are you absolutely sure?" And Cottam said, "Absolutely sure." Rostrum immediately responded. He called out the stewards with blankets, the chefs with coffees and sandwiches in the galley. The engine room crew all turned out. All three shifts of the stokers turned out, some in their nightshirts, some in their long john underwear. They all shoveled and stoked the fires and the boilers like madmen. The chief engineer even hung his hat over the gauge so that they couldn't see that the needle was creeping into the red. The designers of the Carpathia specified that her top speed would be only 14 knots. She was already an old ship, 9 years old. This night she reached 14 and a half, 15, 15 and a half, 16. She eventually made 17 knots on her dash of 58 miles to the sinking Titanic. Nobody knew the old Carpathia could pound so hard.
Clive Cussler, novelist and marine archaeologist. Clive has a very nice website you can visit by going to www.clive-cussler-books.com.
Sir! Carpathia says they're making 17 knots. Full steam for them, sir.
She's the only one who's responding.
The only one close, sir. Says they can be here in 4 hours.
4 hours? Thank you, Brian.
In true amateur radio tradition, licensed radio amateurs around the world apply for and are typically granted special call signs issued by their respective government radio licensing agencies to pay tribute to RMS Titanic and RMS Carpathia. There are simply too many resources out here to list in this program, but if you Google the phrase amateur radio Titanic, you will find scores and scores of pages dedicated to radio communications related to the Titanic and Carpathia. One specific resource for keeping up with radio-related information as it pertains to the RMS Titanic and RMS Carpathia in the context of amateur radio tribute stations is the Radio Officers Association. They have an amateur radio section you can read at www.radioofficers.com/ROARS. You may also go to the ARRL website at www.arrl.org and take a look at their special event calendar. One other Titanic and Carpathia radio-related page can be found at www.hf.ro. An amateur radio special event station that has paid tribute to the RMS Carpathia you will be interested in is GB0MPA. Here's some audio from them.
Roger, London Zulu Papa, stroke portable. You're 5-9er, you're 5-9er. Very, very nice to work you. The name here is Glenn Golf, Lima Yankee, November. Yankee Oscar 2, Lima Zulu Peter, stroke portable. Golf Bravo 0, Mike Papa Alpha.
Okay, Golf Bravo 0, Mike Papa Alpha. Glenn, this is Yankee Oscar 2, Lima Zulu Papa portable. The name here is Vlad, Victor Lima Alpha Delta. I listened to the story of Carpathia. It's a very fine, but sad story. Hi. I very much like how you told it, my friend. I'm a portable close to the Carpathia mountains. Hi. I'm portable with 4x4. 4x4 portable, please. It's a very, very fine day here, spring day, and I'm top of a hill here in the western part of Romania. Golf Bravo 0, Mike Papa Alpha, from Yankee Oscar 2, Lima Zulu, Papa Portable.
Yeah, roger, my friend, Yankee Oscar 2, Lima Zulu, Portable Stroke Port. Lima Zulu Papa Stroke Portable. Yeah, fine on your 4x4 on top of the mountain. Yeah, it's a beautiful sunny day here in the Principality of Wales. And we'll say we're here for a month, so there's lots of chance for Europe to work this special call. So we're not like Papa 5, where everybody can work us. We're giving the commemorative QSL card, Rider Manager, Golf Whiskey 0 Alpha, November Alpha. We'll have the whole story of the rescue and the radio and an incredible picture of the ship we got from the Maritime Museum as she's plowing through the ice to get to the Titanic. Okay, my friend, lots of people trying to work it, so all the very, very best to you, and I'll listen up for the other Yankee Oscar, because there was another Yankee Oscar. So please take care. The other Yankee Oscar, please come.
Yankee Oscar 4, Hotel Echo Kilo.
Yankee Oscar 4, Hotel Echo Kilo. You 5-9?
Yes, Golf Bravo 0, Mike Papa Alpha, you're 5x9, 5x9, operator 9, Gabby, Mike Golf Alpha Bravo India, QTH, Braila, Bravo Romeo, Alpha India, Lima Alpha, back to you, Golf Bravo 0, Mike Papa Alpha, Yankee Oscar 4, Hotel Echo Kilo.
Yeah, roger, and thank you for coming back so quickly. You're also 5-9. All the very best to you, take care. QRZ, Golf Bravo 0, Mike Papa Alpha.
That audio, courtesy of OZ9AEC. That contact was made on the 20-meter amateur radio band, frequency 14.242.00, on the upper sideband. Well, this completes the Shortwave America tribute to the RMS Titanic and the RMS Carpathia. Hopefully you've enjoyed this special. If so, pass it on to your friends, your family, and anyone else who you think might be interested. Be sure to check out www.shortwaveamerica.blogspot.com. You can also keep up with me by going to www.pcjmedia.com/media network plus. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening. 73s and 88s where applicable.